the Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our program today is recorded. Cincinnati Children's Hospital is one of 9 testing and evaluation units as part of the National Institutes of Health's effort to find cures and treatments for COVID-19. I spoke earlier about Children's new clinical trial with 2 people involved in that research. And joining me now to talk about this vaccine research is Dr. Robert Frank. He is the medical director for the Gamble Program for Vaccine Research, also a professor of pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Dr. Frank, thank you for being back with us.
Thank you for having me today.
And also joining us on the phone is Dr. Lori Crosby. She's the director of Community Engagement Core for Cincinnati Children's Hospital, also a professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's. Dr. Crosby, thank you for being with us also.
Thank you.
And Dr. Frank, let's start with you because this is a vaccine being studied as part of a new phase of testing on this vaccine at Cincinnati Children's, but this is a vaccine for adults. So talk about the role that Cincinnati Children's is playing. Why is this coming here?
Sure. So Cincinnati Children's Hospital has the Gamble Center for Vaccine Research. It's really a world-class center for testing vaccines, and we're one of the 9 centers in the United States that the NIH sponsors to do vaccine research. And so when there are new vaccines or updates of vaccines, the NIH will come to us and ask us to test these vaccines.
And this, again, is something that's been tested at least in part before, and now it's coming to Cincinnati Children's and some other American locations. Explain to those of us who are not in the research field but are eagerly awaiting news on this front what exactly that means.
Sure. So that all vaccines – so one of the things I want people to understand is that even though we're doing a lot of studies now and having a lot of energy put toward this, we're not cutting any corners. And so we're still going through the same steps as far as safety. The other thing I think people need to, it's very important for people to know, is that these vaccines will not give you COVID. That is not giving you the live virus of COVID. So that, as a background, is that what the first group of studies is called a phase one, is to look at safety. And so about 5 vaccines now have gone through the phase one testing, and we're moving into phase two and phase three. And so phase two just means that we're enrolling more people to look and see how well the immune response is to the vaccine. And then phase three, we start to look at efficacy or how well the vaccine will protect you against infection. And so that's what we're really moving into right now, is the phase 2-3. And that's really exciting, and because the phase 1 results have been very encouraging, and that the immune response that they've been stimulating. And so we're really hoping that will translate to them being protective against the COVID.
And we're also talking with Dr. Lori Crosby. In addition to her role at Cincinnati Children's Hospital, she is a clinical psychologist and researcher. And Dr. Crosby, this vaccine is called BNT162B1. I guess not a very sexy name for the vaccine, but tell us a little bit more about what happened in those initial phases and why people are optimistic about what's happening now.
Well, as Dr. Frank said, we're very excited to be moving to phase 3, where we can get more people tested and really make sure that the vaccine works for everyone. And so in phase 3, we're really focused on trying to recruit folks from all backgrounds to participate in the study, and that's very important. In the beginning, in phase 1, we had a smaller recruitment pool, and we sort of wanted people who were very healthy. In phase 2, that opened up a bit, and in phase 3, it's almost all comers. So we really want to make sure that the vaccine works well for those with underlying health conditions, such as diabetes or hypertension, other things that might place them at risk for severe symptoms from COVID. And so that's where we're at right now.
And Dr. Frank, the age group that Cincinnati Children's is recruiting to participate in this vaccine trial is 18 to 55 and then 65 to 85. I'm just out of curiosity, why those mid-50s, mid-60s people left out?
So that was for the phase 1 trial, and the reason we're doing that is because we really wanted to make sure we had a large number of people, 65 to 85, and the concern was if you had it from 55 to 85, we may have a number of people 55 to 65, but not as many 65 to 85. But as we're going forward in the phase 2 and phase 3, those restrictions will be lifted, and so now, as Dr. Crosby is mentioning, the phase 1, we were really looking at very healthy people that weren't healthcare workers, that weren't having high risk exposures. For the phase two and phase three, we're removing those. So now it's going to be 18 to up, and that people can be first responders, can be hospital workers, can have underlying conditions. And that's because now we're trying to really simulate more of a real world setting as far as if you were to go to your doctor's office and get a shot, you know, to see how well it's working.
And Dr. Crosby, I know that there's an effort to make sure that the Hispanic community and the African-American community are represented in this research. We have seen a disparity in the case count among those populations, but we also know that research like this often has difficulty recruiting those individuals to participate. Can you tell us a little bit about that from your perspective?
Yes, there is a high level of mistrust in those populations, given the history of research in this country. And we are taking a equitable approach, meaning we're trying to partner with local organizations who are in those communities to let them know about the vaccine so that they can provide the information to the community. We are trying to partner with anyone, actually, who is interested in learning more about the vaccine. We know that part of the mistrust comes from lack of transparency, and so this time we're making sure that we're extremely transparent and that we're partnering with trusted sources to make sure they understand so that they can pass that on to the community.
And we're talking with Dr. Robert Frank and Dr. Lori Crosby from Cincinnati Children's Hospital. It is one of four sites in the U.S. participating in clinical trial for BNT162. That's a vaccine program designed to prevent COVID-19. Dr. Frank, tell us a little bit about the process here. And now that you said that you're in phase three of this, and
Correct. What
exactly does that mean when somebody signs up? What are they signing up for?
Sure. And so just to help people a little bit, is that the BNT is the parent company, but this is a study that's run by Pfizer, and so that may be thing that people have seen in the news around here a little bit more as far as the Pfizer vaccine, you will. And so we test both vaccines from industry and from NIH, and so we're testing the Pfizer vaccine, and then we will be moving into testing NIH-sponsored vaccines too. And so that the phase three is that, like I said, it really simulates more of what would happen in the doctor's office. We still have some more visits, and so that there would be, it's a two-dose vaccine. They're separated by either 3 or 4 weeks, depending on the vaccine. So the Pfizer vaccine is 3 weeks apart. Most of the NIH vaccines are 4 weeks apart. That's just, that's very minor differences. It's nothing really to be concerned about. And that what we do, though, is that we will then have a few extra visits where we'll collect blood to make sure that or see what kind of an antibody response you have. And then we'll be following people for up to 2 years to be seeing if they do have symptoms of COVID. And if they would, then we would want to have them come in so we can check them and to see if they actually were infected or not.
So there is no plan then, Dr. Frank, to deliberately expose anyone to COVID-19?
No, so that there have been talks in the country of doing what's called a challenge model, but that's really in theory at this point. And so the reason that people would talk about doing a challenge model is that way that you'd rapidly expose a number of people to the virus, and the thought is that it would be a way to quickly know as if your vaccine is working. There's some concerns about that because we don't have a great treatment at this point. So we're really staying with the more classical approach at this point of immunizing the population and then just following them to see if they're exposed to the virus.
And so, Dr. Crosby, it sounds like then people would participate in this and then go about their everyday lives. Now, if people are in this particular period in time following some of the guidelines from health and political leaders, that would suggest they would engage in social distancing, quarantining when possible, wearing a mask, and doing the things that would prevent COVID-19 from finding them. So how exactly are we ever to know how this is working?
So I'll turn this to Dr. Frank in a minute, but the answer is antibodies, right? And so we're looking for a response from the body to tell us if this is working, if the efficacy is there against not having the vaccine. So I'll turn to Dr. Frank, who can provide you with a little more detail.
Right. Sure.
So that, and so that's true as far as in the earlier phase, what Dr. Crosby is saying. So the phase three, though, we actually actively monitor people. So we'll be contacting them on a weekly basis. And if they then have any symptoms in between, they'd be letting us know. and that we would be arranging a visit so we could evaluate them if they have symptoms consistent with COVID, actually getting a PCR test to be checking to see if they have the infection or not. So we'll be actively looking to see as if they have the infection. And that'll be really the only way that we can tell that the vaccine's working, is to be able to check. So this is what we do, is what's called a placebo control. And so that some people are going to get, if you will, a saltwater shot, because that's the only way that we can really know that the vaccine is effective, because we look at how many people that got vaccine got infected and then how many people that got placebo got infected, and we compare the rates between those two groups.
And we're talking with Dr. Robert Frank and Dr. Lori Crosby from Cincinnati Children's Hospital, and that's where more research is underway for a possible candidate vaccine to prevent COVID-19 infection. Dr. Frank, I want to ask you about something you just noted, that you said you may be following some of these folks for 2 years or more. And so I've got a question about timing. Everybody's on pins and needles waiting to see when this vaccine or a vaccine might become available. You're saying following people for 2 years. Does that 2 year period indicate that this particular vaccine would not be on the market and available to the general population until that period is up?
No. And so that the licensure of the vaccine would probably be, I would say, at about the earliest, about this time next year. However, the FDA has a program that's called an expanded access program. And so if they have enough data to show that the vaccine is safe and is promising as far as the immune response, they actually can make it available to high-risk groups before it's fully licensed. So that is when Dr. Fauci's talking about potentially having vaccine available to some people by even the late fall. That's what he's talking about, is an expanded access kind of a program. I would look at availability of a vaccine in a doctor's office for routine practice at the earliest, probably about this time next year. The 2 years is just so that we can get good long-term follow-up on everybody and really know how people respond to the vaccine. But that would not hold up a licensure, no.
And Dr. Crosby, you're also a clinical psychologist, and now I think I'm going to need your help in easing my mind here, now that we're thinking that we might be well into next year before this type of vaccine is available to folks. How do people manage to stay calm in all of this and not to overreact and not to let their guard down at the same time without being just overwhelmingly frustrated with this unprecedented situation that the whole world finds itself in?
Yes, it is quite anxiety-provoking. It has really changed our normal of what we have expected and what we've been up to this point. And so I think it's adjusting our mindset and looking at it as a marathon and not a sprint. I think when we first started, we thought it was going to be a sprint. Oh, we can do this for a few months and we're good. Now we need to think about, this is going to take longer. This is going to be into next year. And so how do we adjust now? How do we start thinking about it differently? How do we make masking and social distancing a part of our lives, but still have that social connection with others, which is really important to our mental health?
And Dr. Crosby, we live in this age where everything is in an instant. It's brought to us as soon as we want it with the push of a button on a device held in our hand. Are we more challenged by the period in which we find ourselves living, technology-wise, and able to adjust psychologically to this hurry-up-and-wait mentality?
Definitely. That is definitely causing a challenge. As you said, we are sort of a microwave society, right? We want to stick it in for 15 seconds and be done. And so this is something that we have to, again, readjust our mindset. And I think, you know, part of what has worked for folks is really trying to focus on what, you know, can happen and what is happening. And I've seen some amazing innovation come out of this time period. And so I think if people start thinking, like, what could I do with the extra time that I'm spending at home? Maybe I want to learn a new skill. Maybe I want to practice something. Maybe I want to go back to writing letters. People have started fun things like putting flowers on seniors' porches. So, you know, there's all kinds of creative things and innovative things that we can come up with this extra time once we adjust to the fact that we are going to have the extra time.
And we're talking with Drs. Lori Crosby and Robert Frank from Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Dr. Frank, it's important that we discuss how people participate in this if they are interested. What's the process? What type of candidate is best?
Well, so for the phase three studies, which we're moving into, like I said, we're really looking at enrolling basically anyone. And so if people were interested, they could email us at the GAMBLE program. It's GAMBLEPROGRAM at CCHMC.org. Or they could call us at area code 513-636-7699, and we could give you more information. But really, for the phase two and three that we're, if you will, kind of opening the floodgates, letting most everybody be able to participate, and that we really feel this is important for the community. And as Dr. Crosby is saying, and you were asking about, is that we really want to make sure that we have this offered to the whole community, and that, you know, it's very important that we have a good representation of women, of men, of older people, of younger people, of blacks, of Hispanics, of white, so that we can really make sure that the vaccine works throughout everyone, so all populations are protected. Or if we find a population isn't protected, then we need to tweak our vaccine to make it so we can protect that population.
Dr. Frank, this isn't the only vaccine being explored. There's a race around the world to get this going. And I think generally people are just rooting for anything to break through with some semblance of success so that we can return to some sense of normalcy. Can you talk a little bit about any type of competitive attitudes within your industry as it relates to this type of work?
So I would say for this is that the first thing is that as physicians and as healthcare workers, our main goal is to improve the health of society. And so it would be great if we had multiple vaccines that are available, and that because that way we know we'd have a really good supply. If we have multiple ones that are approved, you know what, then we're in much better shape than having just one. And so that I would be happy of having lots of these approved. Yes, there's going to be trying to get something to market first, but that's not our main interest. Our main interest is to be able to get approved and licensed vaccines that are safe and effective, and so that we can go back to our old normal and get rid of the new normal.
Dr. Lori Crosby, I know you've got to run, but I want to talk about children, and I can do that with Dr. Frank and Will. But before we let you go, I want to talk a little bit more about psychology as it relates to kids. I mean, this is what will probably be called in magazines a COVID generation, people who were of a certain age when this thing hit. What do we expect to see in terms of mental health and psychology in general with children because of this?
So I think there are two sides to the coin. We are definitely seeing an increase in child abuse. We are seeing an increase in depression and anxiety as people try to cope, not only with COVID, but with the social unrest. We, on the other hand, though, this is an opportunity for us to make those important connections for children. Children need a positive adult in their lives that really builds resilience. They need problem-solving skills. They need skills for socialization, and those are things we can focus on and try to build in our children right now so that the impact will be minimized on their social-emotional development. But it is a very tough time. A lot of our kids rely on school for so much support in terms of meals, in terms of socialization, in terms of academic learning. And those supports aren't there, and they may be there in a very modified way this fall and maybe even into winter. And so I think it requires us to do more as parents, as individuals, as community members, to really take a step forward and really lean into our kids and really think about what we can do. And maybe we're a person who's never really who doesn't have children, or our children are grown, and we're thinking, what can we do? Contact a school, contact a family, see if you could be that caring adult. Right now, kids need caring adults in their lives more than ever.
Dr. Lori Crosby is the Director of Community Engagement Corps for Cincinnati Children's Hospital. She's also a clinical psychologist and researcher and professor in the Department of Pediatrics. Dr. Crosby, thank you for the time you could give us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll continue now with Dr. Robert Frank. He is the director of the GAMBLE Program for Vaccine Research and is also a professor of pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Dr. Frank, let's continue the conversation about children and COVID-19? Because all I can share is anecdotes. You have data and far more medical knowledge than I could ever aspire to. So let's say I'm playing on Twitter or Facebook and we hear one of the governors suggest that there's a rise in the number of cases involving kids under a certain age. And then you see reaction from just rank and file people that, oh, it's no big deal. Kids recover. Is it a big deal?
Well, so I think that's a two-prong answer. It's a yes and a no. For the individual child, the likelihood that a child is going to get very ill is quite low. There was a projection, a modeling study that said about 1 out of 2,000 children that got sick would end up in the intensive care unit. So that sounds very low, but if you look at it, we have 80 million children in the United States, 80 million people under 18 years of age. So if you even had 10 to 20% of those children get sick, you're talking in the millions of, or tens of millions of children that are getting infected. And then you're talking about potentially 50 to 100,000 children would end up in the intensive care unit. So when you're looking at it as an individual child, the risk is very small. But when you look at it as a population, you know, 100,000 children in the intensive care unit could be significant or would be significant. I think the other thing, too, is that we have initially focused our testing on people that are in the hospital. And so that you may not detect or you wouldn't detect people with mild illness because there's no reason that they would go to the doctor to be checked. We're still working on data to try to look at this, and one of my colleagues is actually doing a epidemiology study to look at healthy people and the likelihood that they get infection and then the symptoms they're getting. But my guess is that a lot of children are getting infected, but they're not that ill. However, they're still capable of passing the infection. And so that's where the other problem, I think, is that if you have parents that need to go to work, and then grandparents are taking care of the children, you potentially now are exposing a higher risk group to COVID and having more severe illness. And so that's where some of the problem is too. So that I think finding more cases in children right now is probably because we're finally having a bit better access to testing, so it is allowing doctors to have more ability to test more people. So we're getting a better idea of the scope of the infection.
Well, let me quickly follow up on a couple of those things, because it sounds like you're saying we've got more cases because we've got more tests, and that sounds like something President Trump has been saying. So how important then is the positivity rate as it relates to the number of tests we're conducting and the number of cases we're finding?
So it's the positivity rate is very important because the thing is that if you look at COVID, is that the symptoms of COVID overlap many viral illnesses. So from a clinical standpoint, it's very difficult to impossible to be able to say, oh, this is COVID. And so the testing is what really helps us or confirms the diagnosis for us. When we have testing rates of 5%, so 1 in 20 people being positive of testing, that would be considered a high rate. Some states are seeing 15, 20, 30% of the people being tested are positive, so that's astronomical. So that, yes, partly we're seeing more cases because we're testing more, but a lot of it is that we're seeing more cases because there's more cases.
And then lastly, let me ask about what you were saying as it involves kids, that maybe they don't become ill as frequently as other segments of the population, but they can spread COVID, perhaps even to people who would be far more susceptible to the more devastating impacts of COVID-19. Isn't that true for everyone? And so when we see this spike in cases that we've witnessed in America across the country this summer, and you hear from people who say, well, the hospital rate's not going up, the death rate's not going up, so it's not a big deal. What do we need to learn about this situation as it relates to spreading still?
Well, the first place I would say is that our death is going up, is that we're still having as many as 1,000 people a day that are dying from COVID. So it's not that the deaths have gone away. And the other thing, too, is that the deaths are that's the most severe case. I mean, you know, is that you can still have people hospitalized, people in the ICU, and that so that just measuring deaths is not a great marker. But even if you do just measure deaths, they haven't flattened out. They're continuing to rise. The other thing, too, is that people like Dr. Crosby was saying before, they're social animals. We want to be close to people, and that's our nature. And so it's very foreign to stay separated. And when you have a group of people, young people, that in the whole psychology of a young person is we're invincible, that nothing's going to hurt us, nothing can take us down. And so it's just a little virus. And they don't really understand potentially the ramifications of not just them getting infected, but who could they pass it to. And, you know, we've had many cases that have been reported where we've had one person or two people that have been a bit sick or even not that sick, and then you have 20, 30 secondary cases from a church gathering or birthday parties or things like that because people have gone and been in close contact. So we know it can pass, and we don't know who's going to be the person that gets really sick, and that's the problem. If we knew that if Michael got infected, he's going to be really sick, well, we could target and make sure Michael is safe. But we don't know. We know that some people are going to get infected and get really sick, but we don't know who those are. And so that's why we really have to have protection for everyone.
We've been talking to Dr. Robert Frank. He is the director of the Gamble Program for Vaccine Research and also a professor of pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Again, if you are interested in participating in this vaccine study there at Cincinnati Children's, which is open to just about everyone, it sounds like, you can email gambleprogram@cchmc.org or call 513-636-7699. We've got that information at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Dr. Frank, good luck with this study, and thank you so much for the time you gave us today. Very appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate you having us and let us tell people about COVID.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.